Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Stream of Playful Content. What I'm talking about this morning is something that was actually quite a big inspiration to me. There were a certain point, I got into comics originally around the early 90s in what's now called the Dark Age. I was a big Marvel and Image fanboy, and I loved characters such as Spawn, Ghost Rider, The Punisher. You know, a fairly typical amount for and set of characters for a person from that era. But after a while, I stopped reading comics for quite a while. And when I came back quite a bit differently. Toward the end of the 90s, DC really was the first company to embrace whatever was going to be next after the Dark Age was over, because it was getting to the point of where the whole thing was just a running joke anyway, and nobody was really taking it seriously anymore. And the thing that I was most into during this time frame was, well, I'll give a little bit more background. In a lot of ways, the mid to late 90s was actually my favorite era for DC for a very specific reason. It was the first time where they were ever really embracing their history in a big way. And what I mean by that is, you had four generations of characters working simultaneously. You had the greatest generation as the Justice Society and their contemporaries. You had the Baby Boomers as the Justice League. You had Generation X as the Titans. And you had, I guess, the Millennials as Young Justice. And it was really interesting because they were really playing up what these legacies would mean for the first time. Barry Allen had died during Crisis on Infinite Earths, and his sidekick, the Kid Flash, had taken over the role. And one of the things that people tend to not realize why Flash fans of a certain era get frustrated that Barry just came back in and pushed Wally completely out is, Wally was technically the main Flash for as long as Barry was. I actually did the math on it. And during Barry's original run, it was about 20 years. And then Wally's run was about 20 years. So each of them has just as legitimate of a case to be made for why they are the Flash. And honestly, that's what I liked. I liked the thought that I was actually getting a Flash that was completely unique to my generation. And I liked the thought that maybe someday the next generation was going to get their own Flash. That was kind of a cool idea for me. And you had characters like Dick Grayson transitioning from Robin to Nightwing, Donna Troy transitioning from Wonder Girl to Troia, and on top of that, getting married and having a child. You had Roy Harper going from being Speedy to Arsenal, and becoming a father. And Well, you've probably noticed a running theme here. All the original era of sidekicks who had made up the Teen Titans were growing into very adult roles. They were either taking over for their mentors or they were going into their own roles. But they'd all been doing that for a while, and for a certain amount of time, DC was basically just okay with not really having sidekicks. I mean, it was the Dark Age. People'd laugh off sidekicks anyway. But as things started to lighten up over at DC, they started to bring the sidekicks back. Not necessarily back, but new ones. And it didn't actually seem like all that of a... It didn't seem like a concerted effort or like it was something that they'd specifically planned that way. It just seemed to happen organically, and you had a lot of parallel thought going on. You had Impulse showing up in the Flash. You had the Superboy that was one of the four Supermen after the death of Superman. You had a new Robin and Tim Drake. And there'd even been, and even the Green Arrow franchise had a new Arrow character in the form of Arrowette, and there was a new Wonder Girl, though, honestly, Impulse, Superboy, and Robin were all taken fairly seriously. When Wonder Girl and Arrowette initially showed up, they were kind of treated as single-issue joke characters. I've read the original Wonder Girl story. I don't blame them. It was kind of terrible. And the original Arrowette story, let's just say it was influenced by Toddlers and Tiaras about a decade or so too early. But it was actually a really clever idea. You had a young B-list superheroine who was kind of being forced into it by her, okay, more like D through Z list superheroine, whose mother had been a Z list sidekick and was now acting as the world's worst superhero stage parent. It was kind of a clever idea, but it didn't seem like anything more than a one issue joke. Well, much like when the Teen Titans were originally devised by DC, it really seemed like an editor just noticed, hey, we've got a lot of sidekicks. Well, they're kind of like a younger version of the Justice League. Why not throw them in a story together, see what happens? And they did that with this story, Justice League World Without Grown-Ups. It was mainly focused around Robin, Impulse, and Superboy, and a young man who gained wishing powers, and he wished for the world to mean nothing but children. So all the young heroes had to take over roles that were normally reserved for the adults. And also, since Captain Marvel could transition between an adult and a child, he wound up factoring in as well. But it was really just a test to see how they would work as a team and if they'd be interesting enough they could carry a book. And they actually were quite interesting together, but it was pretty simple. They were given an ongoing series, and Peter David was assigned to write it. And for about the first three issues, it's okay, honestly. He's basically going in, okay, three top superhero sidekicks. Guess I'm doing something with them. And about the only idea he really seemed to have right off the bat was one that he used several other times, the id, ego, super ego concept, where Robin was super ego, Superboy was ego, and Impulse was id. He never really seemed to address it beyond just stating that directly, which I think kind of states how little of an idea he actually had for it. But then around issue 4, editorial decided, well, there are some female characters too. They may not have had very strong opening stories, but you can do something with them. So Wonder Girl and Arrowette were introduced, and a character that was created just for the series called The Secret was introduced. And from that point on, Peter David really found his love for the book. He later said that it was because he had daughters, and once the girls came onto the team, then he finally had an idea of how to write it, and the team dynamic gelled. And it led to a lot of really great stories. In the initial stories, one of the funniest parts were, well, just to drive home how little thought they put into the female sidekicks early on, initially Arrowette and Wonder Girl were named Cassie, and then they realized, oh, they're both named Cassie. So they changed one of them to Sissy. But, yeah, that's about how much thought was put into them before Young Justice. But a really hilarious story in their opening appearances in Young Justice were the fact that Wonder Girl had just this ridiculous crush on Superboy. And Superboy seemed to be showing interest in Arrowette and how she got just super jealous of Arrowette. Though it ultimately led to them becoming very close friends. And you just had this really cool, heartwarming friendship developing in there. And because you had that going on, it also made the friendships between the boys seem more genuine. And it really started to feel like a group of kids that were growing up together and understood things that only people within that group would understand. After the story had started to gel a little bit, there were a few mentor characters in the story who were introduced to just give the impression that there was some sort of oversight of these kids. The robot Red Tornado had been giving the kids oversight almost from the beginning. And then later on, Snapper Carr, the former teen mascot for the Justice League, also came in. And it was very interesting because Snapper had a reputation as being a rather immature and goofy teenage character before, whereas the Red Tornado was a very straight-laced robot. So, literally. So you had two very different characters acting as the mentors, a very different group of kids all building these really organic friendships together. And it started out with just the six, and where you had the Secret, who was this ghost who was completely naive to the ways of the world and just ridiculously sweet, though she wound up having a dark side that showed through later on because, well, she was a very young ghost. You don't become a very young ghost in a happy way. But it was kind of interesting because Robin, Superboy, and Impulse all had their own books, but everyone else, the only book they appeared in was Young Justice. And that gave Peter David a lot of leeway and freedom to develop these characters the way he wanted, which involved changing just about everything about Wonder Girl. Which led from her being this annoying joke character under her original creator, John Byrne, to being a character that was so popular when they did a story about a year before, or when they did a contest about a year before the end of the book where they allowed the fans to vote on who was going to be the new leader of the team, the choices being Robin, Impulse, Wonder Girl, and Superboy. Wonder Girl won. I thought that was pretty amazing. I also voted for her, so that's part of why I thought it was so amazing. That this character that just had such an annoying opening story, where she was just this cloying little fangirl who stole all these artifacts of the gods that gave her powers in such an annoying way, barely knew anything about how to use them, had to be saved by Wonder Woman over and over again, and actually transitioned into a very interesting young girl with a lot of depth and a lot of strength of character, to the point of where she became a convincing leader for this team of young superheroes, was a pretty amazing thing. And later on, there were even some characters who were added just for the book. There was Empress, who was the daughter of... In the early stories, there were two agents who were tracking down Young Justice and watching them and making sure that they were staying under control. And one of them had a daughter, and she became Empress. And she was a very active member of the team who sometimes used voodoo. And it was very odd because the art style was very cutesy and cartoony, and yet there was an issue where she performed a magical ritual in the nude. It was a bit of a dissonance going on there. And also, fairly early on, Peter David made a really brave decision. Sissy, or Arrowette, had a guidance counselor at her school who she was very close to because she wasn't close to her mother. She was very frustrated at her mother for forcing her into the position of being a superhero. Well, this guidance counselor was murdered. And she tracked down the murderer of the guidance counselor and was ready to kill him herself, but then only at the last minute was pulled back from it by one of her teammates. She then stopped being a superhero at that point. But she wasn't written out of the book. She was still pretty active. She had a pretty active presence in the whole run of the book, but after she quit being a superhero, since she was this fantastic archer, she actually just became an above-the-board athlete who went to the Olympics for archery and won the gold medal, which was pretty amazing. And then there was even another story where they brought her back into the team, and the joke was she was brought onto the team with no secret identity, just as this Olympic-level archer, and they all had to pretend like they didn't know each other, which was kind of adorable and awesome. And there was also another character, Slobo, who was a childlike clone of Lobo, who was an utterly intense and obnoxious young kid, but he still... and a bit of a sociopath. But the thing is, he still fit in with this group, even though he was kind of a sociopath. And oddly, one of the greatest moments toward the end of the book's run involved him. Because the great thing you have about books like that, where it's mostly super light, super goofy, super happy, when they get serious, it hits you like an atom bomb. There is a story toward the end of the book where you find out what an early villain named Harm had apparently murdered the secret. He was her brother, and he'd murdered her as part of a ritual to gain power for himself. And at that point, the secret developed, she felt a lot of rage over this and wanted to kill Harm. And everyone else tried to talk her out of it. Slobo just went along with it. And this attack wound up not working. Or I think it did work, but it was rather strange. But there was a moment after that where he was sitting down with one of his teammates. And they asked him, "How could you have done something so horrible? She was our friend, and she needed help. Why didn't you go along with her?" And then that was just so powerful when I read it for the first time. Really stuck with me. And also slightly after that, Slobo revealed that his body was degrading since he was a degraded clone. And he was already starting to go blind. And his body was breaking down in other ways. He knew he probably didn't have that much longer to live. And he wound up sacrificing himself to save everybody toward the end. And I did just love the fact that even though he was this mean, obnoxious, sociopathic character, he really valued his friends and his teammates, which was, just a really wonderful thing that stuck with me. All the characters stuck with me. And there's a reason that I was following that book at a time when I wasn't reading anything else regularly. And why I have nearly the entire run of the series. I'm trying to get the last few holdout issues. But they're one of my most cherished possessions, and I could never part with them. It just represented everything I loved about comics, everything I loved about superheroes. And also played up the interesting thing about side characters, because the exception of maybe Green Lantern and the Flash, I've never consistently followed the main characters. Well, okay, and for a short time I was pretty consistently following Spider-Man. But the thing is, Batman's basically the same character he was 75 years ago. Same for Superman. With a few minor changes here and there, or occasional really ridiculously major changes that don't last. But it took so long for him to get married to Lois, and just so long for any kind of changes at all to happen with him, because, well, since he's Superman, he has to be recognizable as Superman. You can't change that much about it. And then Wonder Woman has the opposite problem. She changes so much that none of them ever stick. And she winds up devolving back to normal every so often, only for the next person to come along and completely change everything again, to the point of where you never even notice that any of these things last or matter. And of course, Batman's probably the worst. He just never really grows or changes that much, while everyone around him is. And that's the thing. Like I stated earlier, Roy Harper became a father. Dick Grayson grew into his own role as Nightwing. Wally West took over as the Flash. Donna took her own. Troy took a new heroic identity and became a mother. side characters, you could really see progress that you never would with the main characters. You could actually take real chances, make real changes with them. And it could happen organically. It wouldn't have to be maintained. It wouldn't have to be a status quo that was just maintained for decades, or gigantic changes that were just forced at a moment's notice. If a character changed over time, it could, it would stick and it would be meaningful. And sadly, due to the time frame, a lot of the things that I like about DC don't work as well as I'd like anymore. The last real effort to move in that direction was the James Robinson run of the Justice League, where Dick Grayson as Batman, Donna Troy as Wonder Woman, Cyborg, a bunch of the Teen Titans characters basically, were all in key roles on the Justice League, their mentors team. And Young Justice had transitioned into the Teen Titans. And it was really clear that there was a good chance that all of these characters were eventually going to progress to the next stage as well. They even went as far as taking Wally out for a while and having Bart become the Flash, and it just never took. And at that point, Dan DiDio decided, okay, the Generation 1 sidekicks are just a problem. We need to get rid of them. We need to maybe de-age the Generation 2 sidekicks and just have that be it. And I really tend to hate that just because I feel like DC's giving up something that made it special. But on the other hand, when you're actually looking at the ages of people from the different time frames, the actors on Star Trek who would be comparable to the Silver Age heroes, they're all in their 70s and 80s now. Anyone who was who would actually have fought in World War II, they're either dead or close to it in a nursing home. And, yeah, it's kind of interesting that the Gen Xers have grown up and the Millennials are coming into their own, but it's just not the same. And I'm not, and they're not going to pull the trigger on everyone transitioning over. And eventually, we're going to have to admit that four generations at once is about the most they were ever. And it was wonderful for the time. I guess it might be lost forever, but I valued it. I try to capture that in my own work. It's a really wonderful thing, and I would hate to see it lost completely, even if I understand has had to abandon it. Well, on that note, I am going to close things up. If all goes according to plan, I'm thinking about doing another episode tomorrow. I'm not even going to tell you what it's going to be about just yet, because you're going to think it's weird. You just are. There is no way around it. But you will have to wait till tomorrow to hear about the weird little things my weird little brain are thinking. Have a good day.